coherence. So talk to us about coherence in terms of, we've just been talking about worldviews and that sort of thing. What's the importance of coherence, and how would you say that Christianity is better at that, if it's a good thing, than other worldviews?
Yeah. Well, coherence is, we could get a little sidetracked defining the term coherence, but the rough and ready way to understand coherence is to think of a whether it's a worldview or some theory, maybe a scientific theory that we talk about as coherence. It's parts fit together and mutually support one another. So if you have a coherent theory, it's not just logically consistent, because I could give you three claims right now that are logically consistent. They don't contradict one another, but they have absolutely nothing to do with one another either. There's no sort of internal connection or mutual support between them. So when we talk about coherence, we're not strictly talking about logical consistency. We're rather talking about the way in which one part of the Christian worldview lends support to, or explains, or sheds light on other parts of the Christian worldview. And so, to take an example, take the doctrine of the resurrection. So we believe that Jesus was crucified, and then on the third day he rose again from the dead. He was raised to life again. Now that claim in and of itself will strike a lot of people as quite bizarre. Okay, so someone died and they came back to life again. I mean, okay, that's interesting, but why would something like that happen? What's the meaning? What's the significance of it? Well, in fact, the doctrine of the resurrection really only makes sense, and you can only really appreciate the force of that doctrine if you also understand the doctrine of the atonement, the doctrine of the incarnation, the doctrine of sin, and the doctrine of creation, and the doctrine of God. I mean, all of these doctrines provide part of the background context for understanding the resurrection, that there is a God who is perfect and all-powerful and all-knowing and all-good, who created the world and created us in his image, and we rebelled against God, and so God put in place a plan of redemption that he had from eternity, and so on. You start spelling out the Christian story, and once those other doctrines have been laid out, then you say, well, now I understand who Jesus was and what he came to do. Of course he came back to life again. How could he, God, the Son of God incarnate, die for the sins of the world, make a sufficient atonement for the sins of his people, and then stay dead? That would be incoherent for the incarnation and the atonement not to be followed by a resurrection. And so once you start to see how these pieces fit together, I think it can communicate something of the power of the Christian story in making sense of human history and much more besides.
So coherence in it becomes evidence in and of itself, right? The more coherent
it is,
that sort of thing.
Yes, I would say that we would expect what is true to be coherent, not in the sense of it has a rather sort of trivial logical consistency to it, but that it is integrated, that it is mutually connected and supportive of itself. And so coherence, I would say, is not it's not sufficient for truth, because we could come up with, you know, non-Christian stories that have a sort of inner coherence, but they aren't true. But nonetheless, it is one of the important indicators or marks of truth, that you are giving an account of things that is integrated at quite a deep level.
Yeah, I always think the argument goes, oh, well, you know, Spider-Man lives in New York. There's you know, the world that coheres in of itself there. But there are things that you bring in to understand New York and the things that Spider-Man does and everything like that. There's more that you have to bring into that story where this coherence here seems to be a expanding, literally universal type understanding of, again, you can't piecemeal this away. You can't just put Spider-Man in New York.
Right.
You have to build an entire world that is different from what we experience and then have it cohere in of itself with morality and or whatever version you have there.
But even that fictional story, that fantasy story, has to borrow large elements of context from the actual world in order to make sense. And so any worldview has to be totalizing. You can't just focus on one aspect of reality and say, okay, we've explained this, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff that it doesn't speak to. Any worldview worth its salt really, as I say, needs to be totalizing in the good sense of making all-encompassing truth claims.
And that's one of the things that I really respected and found different from like Francis Schaeffer, where he would talk about how art and music and beauty kind of are indwelled. I would say infected, but that's a bad word. Indwelled with ideas that we get from the scope of Christian the Christian story and how it all builds up, and you know how even Picasso has to his favorite painting of his wife is one that reflects her beauty, and it's one that's not in these series of shapes, but it's one that reflects what he perceives. And why is that? If he's trying to, you know, be this lack of a better term, blockhead.
I perhaps it's a deficiency of my book, although you know, I said that there was a limit to the length of it that meant I couldn't say everything that I would have liked to say. But there are many aspects of human experience that I think also point us to the Christian worldview, like beauty, like our basic instincts about what we should be doing in the world, mathematics, music. All of these things we take for granted, but I think that the Christian story, if you can call it that, or the Christian meta-narrative, gives us a satisfying way of understanding why there are these things in the first place, and also relating them one to another. For example, in music is very mathematical. Okay, so on the one hand, music can, and I'm not a musician by trade. My wife is the musical one in the family, but I understand enough about music to know that it's a very powerful vehicle for communicating emotions, whether positive or negative. It has this deep existential impact on us. And even modern secular people still see the power, can appreciate the power of music. And yet music at the same time is very mathematical in the way that the time signatures are arranged. There's an order to the rhythm. There's an order to the relationship between different notes in a scale. Even the frequencies of the notes between, you know, octaves and fourths and fifths, there's a mathematical regularity to that. And is that just coincidental? That seems like that begs for some sort of deeper explanation, some unifying story of why there would be a relationship between something as systematic and logical as mathematics and something as artistic and aesthetically valuable as music. That's just, you know, I'm just throwing that out there and you know, I haven't worked this out in rigorous fashion. So,
more Christian movie makers need to pick up your book, understand it better, so that we can have actually good Christian films. We can be back on top. We peaked at Sistine Chapel, and then we just let the Enlightenment and secularists have it after that.
Yeah, I have some issues with the Sistine Chapel, actually. But
well, it was all done with the crick of his neck for 15 years, so
you can't deny the genius of it, for sure. Yeah. But I think there actually are Christian movies that are good. It's just that they aren't branded as Christian movies and marketed as Christian movies, and that's probably for the better.